This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
12:03, second half of the show is underway. After a bit of a dreary day yesterday, sun's back today. Not as hot as it was earlier, but it's golf weather. We got the second major of the men's season getting underway in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Southern Hills tomorrow. Talk more about that. We go to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. And we welcome in a friend of the show, Adam Stanley. Adam, good afternoon. How are you?
Hello. I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Outstanding. Creature's got something for you right off the top here.
Yeah, just before we get into the actual golf, how many times has Jeremy Sharon brought up his 79 so far?
Geez, at least a handful. Yeah, like over under one hand, I'd pound the over for sure.
Perfect. he decided to come on our show last week or the week before, and
he decided.
Yeah, okay, he decided that he had some news to share with us. So, and we spent about 15 minutes on it. And
going through the birdies and bogeys.
Yeah, everything. He took us through, like, the entire back nine on the air.
Is this when I was on mornings last week?
No, I was, I think I was with Lever.
Okay. So Jeremy, who, of course, reporter downstairs at CTV Ottawa, former intern with us and many years ago at TSN 1200, decided to hop on the air and brag about his golf game.
Yeah.
My goodness, Jeremy. Flag on the play. Oh.
He's big time in everyone now. You know, he's on CTV's national broadcast.
Oh, yeah.
He's the go-to guy. He's like, oh, I'm going to come on and talk about my 79.
People are going to care about this now.
Yeah, people are going to care about this. You know, this is not fake news, people. This is
there
real.
We go. Yeah. Oh, man. All right, now, before we get into it, okay, Adam, you're all over the place. What is Adam Stanley this week? Okay, I got it because you write for so many different publications and covering golf here. So how do I bill you this week? What's going on in Adam's world?
I'm in my sweatpants at home covering for the Toronto Star for the PGA. So my first big story is coming out tomorrow, just preview, and then we've got daily stuff for the balance of the week. The PGA is neat. You know, obviously they've got a virtual media center set up again, so couldn't quite get to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Not really much of a draw to get there, but we're going to have some inside stuff and had a nice conversation on the phone with Mackenzie Hughes yesterday as well. So, yeah, Toronto Star stuff starting today all the way through until Sunday night.
Good stuff. That's where you can catch Adam here covering the PGA Championship. So Mackenzie Hughes, Corey Connors, Adam Hadwin. We'll look for your chat with Mackenzie. So those are the three Canadians that we can track in the field. Where would you say the games are at for these three and their chances to make some noise?
Yeah, it's a great question. Corey's talking to all of the media in about an hour, so we're going to check in on him shortly. But, yeah, speaking to Mackenzie Hughes, it was interesting because he said, you know, his game physically feels really good. And yeah, he missed the cut last week. But the week prior, he had his first top 10 finish in a bunch of months. And he tells me that coming into this week, it's more of a mentality thing. It's, I've played majors before. I've been in the final group on a Sunday before. These are the kinds of tournaments I want to win and contend in now, as I've played in a lot of them. And as, you know, my PGA Tour career has continued to grow and blossom. And I want to kind of get over that hump. And I think that the same can be said for Corey Connors as well. I mean, we talk about him a lot. Yes, he's Canadian, but that dude's the 31st ranked golfer in the world. He's third on tour in greens and regulation. Like, we're talking about a guy who's creeping into the elite of the elite conversation. And I think the same thing holds true for him with respect to the mentality of getting over the hump of, this is a major. I deserve to be here. I deserve to be in the conversation. And if he can kind of wrap his head around that, then I think it could be a special week. The three guys, Hadwin, Connors, and Hughes, they all have very similar games. So I think it's just going to be one of those weeks where who can kind of handle this pressure the best.
This is going to feel like a very Canadian question of me to ask, but with Connors, you mentioned the 31 beside his name and the number of times he's finished in the top 10 at these big events. Is it time that we start seeing him more on TV? Like, is he going to, or I guess I'll ask it a different way. Does he have he must have the respect among his peers, but why aren't we seeing it so much in terms of TV coverage? Like, he was barely on the screen at the Masters.
Yeah, it's a good question. It is a very Canadian-leaning question. I'm sure, you know, the radio stations in Sweden are asking, why aren't we seeing more of Henrik Stenson, and et cetera, et cetera. But the thing is with Corey is that guy is not very flashy. He kind of goes about his business. He hits the ball like nobody else does on the planet with his irons, kind of just goes about his business, doesn't really do any fist pumps, doesn't really get too high, kind of just looks like the Terminator with his sunglasses on and goes about his business. And I think that's a little bit partly to do with why we don't see him on TV all that much. We do see him when he makes a hole-in-one, and which he has done more than anybody else on the PGA Tour over the last 18 months. But, you know, Corey, I've talked to him at length, and he really doesn't care about that. He knows that his game is just going to speak for himself, and obviously we as Canadians would love to see more of him on TV, but he'll just have to give everybody a reason to watch and to put him on the screen.
Now, before we get into Tiger, because we will get into Tiger, because Tiger's there.
Oh, goody.
Okay. And I want to ask about the course, because Tiger has won many PGA championships. In fact, he's won on this golf course a PGA championship before. A video that I saw this morning, Adam, and I'm sure you've seen the same thing, and lengthening golf courses, especially in these big tournaments, you know, everybody tries to do it. And there's in particular, and I want to get my holes right here. It was the 13th tee. They've moved it back so much that to hit your tee shot, the players will be driving the ball over the 12th green that they just played. So we could have some delays and some backup problems here, but it was so weird to watch a player hit a tee shot and right in front of them is a green from the previous hole, because this is how they tried to lengthen the 13th hole here. And so this is a macro question, obviously. Where is this going to end with trying to lengthen these golf courses as technology gets better and better and guys hitting the ball further and further? And now it's getting comical what they're trying to do to tee boxes to try to lengthen holes.
Yeah, I mean that's a topper's nightmare for sure, having to hit a tee shot over a green. But it's a great question. Where is the end? I don't know. How long's a piece of string? You know, it's one of these things where it is funny though. We've talked about Bryson DeChambeau at length on this program and in the past, and he tried to take his body to the absolute limit to hit the ball as far as possible. And he's been on the shelf for, you know, 6 to 8 weeks the last little while because he hurt himself. So it may not be the golf courses that are physically or that are going to be actually restricted moving forward. It may actually be just the human body. And yeah, this week it's a par 70. It's going to be over 7,500 yards. Only two par fives. I wrote about this morning. Only two par fives. Both are over 630 yards, I think it is. So this is a beastly golf course with long rough and tough greens. But it's a major championship. So do I think that we're going to get to 8,000 yards for a major championship venue? Probably sooner rather than later, because we keep creeping up past 75, 76, even 7,700 yards. But the guys are so good that really it's the rough and the weather that's going to be the thing that really impacts the score, less so on the length side.
I just remembered something else. Hopefully you can add detail. What was the event? It's been a few years now, Adam. It was a major. It was a major championship where the way the tee box was structured, players could see the shortcut and they were teeing off in a totally another direction to go around this dog leg and going up another fairway and over. And by round two or three, overnight, the crew planted full-grown trees.
Yeah.
You know, to block.
I don't remember that. Oh my
God. That's enough of that, right? And though that happened, anyways, just kind of speaks to the length of what, you know, the way these golf courses are set up here to try to force and test the best players in the world as we see everybody getting longer and longer, it seems. Anyways, sorry, that was an aside. If you don't remember that, that was crazy a few years ago. I remember overnight, it's like, well, they planted trees, and they're not saplings. They brought in trees to try to block that road to go in that direction. All right, Tiger, the Tiger effect, and he's going to play with Spieth and McIlroy. That'll be a lot of fun to follow that group for the next couple of days here. What do you make of Tiger's chances? He made the cut at the Masters. Can he make the cut? Can Tiger be relevant at this major championship?
Yeah, I mean, Tiger's always going to be relevant. With respect to Tiger's relevancy on the leaderboard, I mean, he's rusty. And he admitted himself, he just doesn't practice anymore because he can't. His body isn't allowing him to do these marathon practice sessions anymore. Even on putting greens, he can't bend over long enough to spend, you know, an hour or two, you know, rolling 6-footers or rolling 15-footers or getting a speed right or getting absolutely dialed. So he has to just kind of rely on, you know, the Tiger Woods instinct and the Tiger Woods kind of internal fortitude that he's always had in order to play well. So, yep, made the cut at the Masters. Four rounds there, not easy walk. In fact, probably one of the more difficult walks on the PGA Tour. Southern Hills is no walk in the park either, no pun intended. It's not as bad as the Masters, but it's not a good walk either. So again, I don't doubt Tiger Woods' golf game, and I don't think anyone should either. His iron play continues to be absolutely fabulous. His numbers with respect to speed are near the top of what the tour's best is. I think somebody posted, you know, it's hovering around 175 miles an hour ball speed off the tee, so that's great too. If he can find something with the short game, we saw it at the Masters. He had like 8 or 9 three putts on the Saturday, just terrible, absolutely horrific on the green. So if he can find something there, I think he'll make the cut. If he struggles with the flat stick early, his struggles with the flat stick came late at the Masters, Saturday, Sunday, so he had already made the cut. If he struggles with the putter Thursday, Friday, this may be an early exit for him. If he can find everything tee to green and make a few putts early, he'll definitely be here on the weekend. I just think that the competition is too stiff for Tiger Woods to have a real chance to actually win this week.
Obviously, the Masters it's insane to see what Tiger's presence there did, because it's a tournament that everyone's like anxiously waiting for and glued to anyways. But for the rest of these majors and big tournaments that he will compete in, what does his presence mean, whether it's to the writers, the TV numbers, the fellow golfers? Like, what does him being at this tournament mean?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the group that he's in for Thursday, Friday, Rory and Jordan, you know, they could have installed anyone else there. Maybe Brooks Koepka, two-time PGA champion, just off the top of my head, Scottie Scheffler, world number one, maybe could have been installed there. And it would have still been an absolutely incredible must-watch group. But adding Tiger just adds a whole other level to it. So TV numbers are going to be off the charts. Yes, the PGA championship is not the Masters, but people are going to want to watch and see how Tiger Woods does. So TV numbers are going to be crazy. You know, the writers who are on site, of course, everyone was there to see Tiger, to talk to Tiger, to get his POV on a number of different things. Phil Mickelson, the Saudi-backed golf league, how hard it is to win a major, his win in 2007, the golf course, you could go on and on. So it's really the Tiger show, and everyone else is just supporting actors to it. But it's awesome. I mean, this whole generation of champions on the PGA Tour right now have all been inspired by Tiger Woods to want to play like him, and arguably a lot of them picked up the game because of him. So between the players, the media, the fans at home, you know, this is bonus golf for us with respect to Tiger Woods on the PGA Tour, and we should just embrace that.
How much does that effect help a guy like Scottie Scheffler? And he kind of joked about it. It's like, well, nobody really cares about me. He's only the number one guy in the world, and he could go on a heck of a run here now. And it's not like we're not paying attention. Of course you are. But when Tiger's around, it's the pressure's off, right? There's not just as many eyeballs on you, and you're not taking as many questions, and you could say that there's a little bit less pressure.
100%. Each of the world's number 1, 2, and 3 ranked golfers, so that's Scottie Scheffler, Colin Morikawa, and Jon Rahm, were all kind of asked the same question in their pre-tournament press conferences yesterday. Tiger's here. How do you guys feel? And they're like, great. Takes the pressure off me. And they all kind of gave a similar answer, just like what you said a couple minutes ago. And I think that for someone like Scottie Scheffler, like, that dude's won 4 times already this year. He's world number 1 by a large margin. He's finished in the top 10 at the PGA Championship both times that he's teed it up. And he just shot 64 at Southern Hills 2 weeks ago in a whipping rainstorm like it was nothing. Any other year, this would have been front page news, crazy favorite, this guy's going to win, guaranteed slam dunk. but Tiger's here. So we don't care that much about it. No offense to Scotty Scheffler, but Tiger just does something totally different to everybody.
Aside from Tiger and the Canadians, is there a pairing that you're most excited to follow just from a pure fan of the game?
I think it's got to be that world's number one, two, and three grouping. Scheffler, Morikawa, and John Rahm are all grouped together. And everybody has kind of something to prove. Scheffler, obviously, having won the Masters, is now looking for the second leg of the Grand Slam this year. And for all intents and purposes, he's certainly trending towards being the guy to beat this week. Colin Morikawa's won two majors already, and he's only played six or seven of them in his career. So we're looking at potentially an all-time great start to one's career by Colin Morikawa. And then John Rahm is the interesting one. I mean, former world number one in the world, has only won the one major. He's kind of stuck on that. And he won a couple weeks ago in his last start on the PGA Tour. And for those guys, to see them all grouped together, we rarely get numbers one, two, and three, or one and two kind of put together at a championship like this. So certainly as a fan of the game, even a casual sports fan, anytime you can watch the best in that game play all together and compare each other, that's what I'm super looking forward to this week for sure.
Before we let you go, I just want to get some thoughts from you, Adam. Of course, you follow golf at large here. Some thoughts on the Saudi-backed tour and just some recent information in the last few days that's come to light. Apparently, Jack Nicklaus was asked before Greg Norman to be the face, and Jack turned it down, obviously. Ricky Fowler sounds like he still might go. Anyway, despite the PGA Tour saying that we won't be granting any official releases. And now that Phil Mickelson is not defending his PGA Championship, there are some whispering, is Phil ever going to play on the PGA Tour again? So this all ties into the same thing, the startup tour, the event London's going to go the same week as the Canadian Open. What are your thoughts on all this now at this stage, and maybe how many players will be saying, you know what, I know you're not giving me my release, but I'm going anyway?
Yeah, it's been very interesting the last few weeks, because at the Players' Championship, you know, Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the tour, was like, we're moving on. Rory came out and said, I'm pretty sure it's dead in the water. And he was, and it's just not going away. And Rory was asked about that a couple of days ago, and he's like, yeah, I guess I kind of spoke too soon, but, you know, it is what it is. You know, basically any kind of cliche that you can throw at this alternative league backed by the Saudi money, the Live Golf series, you know, the tour said no to all the people who asked for releases. Maybe Phil's going to turn up there, but of course he's going to fly there and then come all the way back and play the U.S. Open. Who knows? Ricky was an interesting one. Ricky's been propped up by the tour a lot over the last decade for a guy that doesn't really win all that much. But I think Colin Morikawa said it, Justin Thomas said it, Rory kind of said it, and I would agree. If you're going to go, just go. Like, the PGA Tour's got a ton of guys who are going to kind of carry on that mantle. Tiger Woods is spearheading that significantly. He talked at length about the legacy of the tour and the majors and everything like that yesterday. And Justin Thomas and all these other guys who've been number one in the world, hey, if you want to make a decision and go, go. We're going to chase majors. We're going to chase a legacy. We're going to play here on the PGA Tour alongside the best in the world. And there's no doubt that having this new series is going to change the lay of the land in men's golf. But if it's going to change it for the better, it certainly remains to be seen.
And last one, kind of my thoughts, one of, if there's any credence to this, do you not feel that maybe Phil Mickelson's kind of pot committed on this now? I don't know if his reputation's ever going to be intact after everything that's happened, regardless of what happens now.
Yeah.
He might as well go. you know what I mean? Part of me kind of feels that way at this point. I think that, you know, when he was younger, there was very polarizing. People loved hit Phil. People hated Phil. I think he's his age, especially when you win at your 50. There's more love from people that maybe weren't fans of his. But after what's happened now, I don't know. Like I can't see him kind of getting the genie back in the bottle on the Phil reputation. And I wonder if he just says, well, I guess I'm going then.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a possibility, because he asked for a release. Obviously, the tour said no to all of them. So if he does go, he'll be, you know, totally a pariah as it relates to the PGA Tour and its management. And even Tiger Woods was asked yesterday, hey, have you reached out to Phil? And he said, no, I haven't. We just have a totally 100% differing of opinion on how the PGA Tour should run. And no, I haven't talked to him. So maybe he will go because he's not going to really have any other options when he comes back because he has kind of been the fall guy for it. But maybe he won't. I mean, it's really too bad. It kind of, maybe my last point on the Phil side of things is that this should have been a celebration this week. I mean, you said it.
Yeah.
The guy was 50 years old last year.
That's incredible what he did.
Won the PGA Championship. Nobody thought he could do it. He didn't have – there was no reason why he should have done it, and he did. And it should have gone down in history as one of the greatest major championship accomplishments in this game. And it probably will continue, but there's, you know, a bit of a mark on it, and it's a little unfortunate.
All right, we'll leave it there. Last one, who's your pick to win? Give us the Adam Stanley pick to win the PGA Championship.
All right, from the favorite
pool. You're rolling, Kenny? Let's hold him to it.
We'll talk on Monday either way. From the favorite pool, I like Jordan Spieth to complete the Grand Slam this week. There's another storyline we didn't even talk about, Jordan Spieth going for the Grand Slam. So I like Jordan Spieth. From the longer shot side of things, I like Hideki Matsuyama or Brooks Koepka. Brooks, I don't think, is getting enough love this week as he should be at the PGA. So those are my fellas.
All right, good stuff. Follow Adam this week in the Toronto Star as he covers the PGA Championship. Always appreciate the visit. And thank you for helping us throw Jeremy under the bus. I appreciate that as well.
Anytime. Thanks, guys. Right. Have a good week.
Okay, Adam Stanley joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. We're back in a moment on In the Box on TSN 1200.
This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
All right, welcome back to it. In the Box continues on TSN 1200. Thank you, Adam Stanley. Teeing up the PGA Championship gets underway tomorrow, and it is... when he came back and he played the Masters, just a massive deal. Hasn't played since, and next major pops up, Tiger shows up, and even when it's Tiger at this stage of his life and his career, he just shows up, and it's like nobody else cares. Tiger's here. Oh, Scottie Scheffler, you're having one of the best seasons we've seen since Tiger was in his heyday, and you got to win. You're the world number one by a long shot. You could win this major. And nice talking to you. Let's go talk to Tiger. And every question to these players is about Tiger. He's still the needle. Still the needle. And all gets underway tomorrow. And we'll be tracking the Canadians. Mackenzie Hughes, Corey Connors, and Adam Hadwin all taking part. Steve Lloyd, Graham Creech, Kenny Walls with you. In the Box continues on TSN 1200. Gord Wilson will grace us with his presence at about a half hour from now. Look forward to that conversation. I teased Barry Trotz. I want to talk about that right here. So was reported yesterday Barry Trotz was in Winnipeg interviewing to be the head coach of the Jets. Other reports saying that the Philadelphia Flyers have some interest in Barry Trotz as well. Initially, when we were all shocked that he was let go by the Islanders, it was thrown out there. I think Darren Dreger reported that, you know, don't sleep on Barry maybe being a general manager as well. Could it be possible that he could do both if he goes into the right situation? We'll see. But it doesn't sound like, if you want to take some time, Graham, you're not accepting these interviews. He's got a year left on his deal. There's no fire for him. So the fact that he is even going on this tour that started in Winnipeg, and if you're Winnipeg, you don't let him leave town until he signs a contract. Barry Trotz is going to be coaching again in the NHL. Because you would shut that right down. Say, hey, you know what? I need some time. They're gonna pay me for a year anyway. I'm good for now. The fact that he went to Winnipeg for an interview, it's just a matter of when, right? Barry Trotz going to have a job within a week, isn't he?
I don't know for sure if it'll be a week, because maybe something else comes up. Like, what if Colorado doesn't get by the second round? Is Bednar safe? Maybe he takes his time to pick a spot. I know Philadelphia's showing interest. Why would he want to go there? They're not in a position to win anytime soon. So I don't know if he's going to have it within a week, but he's going to have his pick for sure.
That's a good point. Maybe he's looking at a situation where it's the best opportunity I could land to win right away, rather than maybe the best offer I can get right now. If he wants to slow play it, let it play out here. But I'm somewhat impressed that Winnipeg got him to an interview right now. He doesn't accept that unless he's at least somewhat interested in taking that job, right?
Yeah.
I think we can agree upon that. And, of course, that's his home province, and I don't know if that matters. Sometimes we read into that kind of stuff too much, right? Like, oh, Claude Giroux grew up here in Ottawa a lot. He wants to play here. Well, okay, maybe. Sometimes we can overdo that. We all do it, media fans. So the fact that he's from Manitoba, maybe that matters, maybe it doesn't.
Well, maybe.
But the fact that he took the interview, that's, if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, are you going to find a better coach than Barry Trotz?
No.
Do you not just close that deal?
You try to.
Time? You talk to Mark Chipman and say, listen, are we prepared to make him the highest paid coach in the league if we have to?
You know what it also does? It might convince, if you want to keep Mark Scheifele and he's thinking about potentially going elsewhere, that probably keeps him around, don't you think?
Well, and Pierre-Luc Dubois, who's younger and is coming off a really good year, he's an RFA. It's not just Scheifele as well, right? But it is interesting all season long, and, you know, you were doing most of those pregame shows. Darren Dreger would say the same thing to me from time to time. He would always just drop Winnipeg. Watch Winnipeg. Could be a big, big turnover in Winnipeg in the offseason. And I saw Dregs as recently as within the last week, again, basically say he does not see Mark Scheifele being a Winnipeg Jet by training camp.
Yeah,
that's his read on the situation about how that's going to go.
That's what I would assume, too. But if you land Barry Trotz, and
you
if
almost
the,
said Barry Effing Trotz, didn't you? Hey,
I don't know.
You land Barry Effing Trotz.
Yeah, you want to talk about this? You almost dropped an F-bomb today, too. Kenny can confirm that for me. But if you land him, and if the motivation behind potentially moving is purely based on winning and wanting to win, the desire to win, as I without knowing what goes on behind the scenes in Winnipeg, I think it's pretty fair to say that Mark Scheifele is a hockey nut through and through that wants to win, and if that is his main motivation behind him potentially wanting to leave, and now Barry Trotz ends up being your head coach, I think I'd probably sit down and think about again where I want to go or if I want to stay, because it's not getting much better than that. Unless I think you'd have to have a plan too to kind of fill out other holes on the roster, specifically the blue line, but that would be massive.
Beyond maybe enticing players you want to keep to stay, does Barry Trotz have the kind of cachet that maybe would attract other players that usually, let's be honest, maybe wouldn't want to go play in Winnipeg? But if you land somebody with the pedigree of Barry Trotz as a head coach, could that be a draw and help out the general manager trying to augment his team?
I think it would play a significant role.
And there's no salary cap on non-players, and that gets back to, if you've got Barry Trotz agreeing to speak to you, like, how do you let him leave the conversation? Just keep up on the number. Barry, we'll make you the highest paid coach in the league. Say no to that. Let's get the cards on the table right here.
Yeah, well, I think that offer will probably still stand in 2 or 3 weeks.
Oof. Well, anyways, I'm impressed. I'm impressed that, you know, Winnipeg got him to.
You think
the
Jets are saying no if he circles back because the spot doesn't open?
No, I don't think. But I think that you don't want him waiting. I wonder if Colorado loses.
Oh no, I'm not saying
you know
don't
what?
Try. I'm just saying that doesn't
lock the door. You're not leaving. Okay, let's keep talking here.
Yeah, sorry. I'm going to wait and see if there's better options.
Oh, man. Interesting. But anyways, I think we can put the bed. Barry might take some time. He's going to coach. He's going to be right back into the league. And makes you wonder if the attractive part about Barry Trotz is the impact he had the last two times when he left his longtime job in Nashville. Goes to Washington, leads them, eventually they win the Stanley Cup. Immediately goes to the Islanders when they lose John Tavares and essentially come back with everybody else the same, and he shaves 100 goals off the goals against in year one.
Back-to-back conference finals. I think it's fair to say they probably overachieved from what their roster was.
I would say so. And that's, like, there's other, you know, great coaches. Coaches can come in and have immediate impacts, and sometimes you get that new coach smell, that new coach bump. Barry Trotz, though, I would say he's kind of got scoreboard. Even though he didn't win a Stanley Cup with the Islanders, in recent history of a coach coming into a situation with a roster, there wasn't anything significant that changed beyond losing your number one center and your captain, and you come in there and you shave 100 goals off the goals against and you start winning playoff series immediately to the tune of, as you mentioned, their last 2 years before this COVID and new building year. You go to back-to-back conference finals where you lose to the now two-time defending Stanley Cup champions. It's pretty easy to draw the line to the coach that this guy can come in and help us right now be better. Well, it starts in Winnipeg. See if he makes it to Philadelphia and has a chat there as well. Thoughts on that? Send them in. 12-1200, standard text message rates apply. We also haven't touched on this other than just passing mention earlier in the show. Interesting that the NBA conference finals got underway last night. Celtics had no Marcus Smart, foot injury. Horford's also out. They called it health and safety protocol, but COVID protocol. Still, Celtics have a lead, looking good midway through the game. Then Jimmy Butler goes off at 17 in the third quarter, 41 on the night, and the Heat end up taking game one. I find Jimmy Butler to be kind of fascinating ever since.
I was wondering what word you were going to use there.
When the Sixers loaded up, right, and they brought him in, and that's Kawhi's shot, and the Raptors beat the Sixers and went on to win. You remember what he was thought of? It's like, it's just not, you know what? They brought him in, disappointing. Not sure if this guy could be the guy. It seems ever since that he left Philadelphia, it's totally flipped around, hasn't it? That he's been seen as gamer now, leader, gamer.
I think he's always been viewed as, I don't think the narrative was not the guy. It was more the whose fault is the locker room cancer stuff. Is it the places that you were, or was it you in forcing your way out of some of these situations? Like, was it the culture and everyone else in Minnesota, or was it you, for example? I think he's probably definitely got a bit of an ego there where you'd have to have the right mix within the dressing room and organization. But I didn't take it as you can't win with him. Like, I don't think that part's flipped. I think it's more.
Doesn't that go hand in hand? If people are asking, are you the problem or was it your situation that was the problem? Until, you know, you separate and things play out, and it certainly played out that Jimmy Butler wasn't the problem. I think that's very, very, very clear. But you got to go back to that moment in time. That was a topic of conversation.
Yeah, well, maybe you got to question the people that are evaluating those things, because they chose a guy like Ben Simmons over a guy like, yep. and I'm gapping on the name, the player that they brought in that same deadline that's still there. Anyways, over a Jimmy Butler. And now look at what the league and world thinks of a Ben Simmons.
All right, who do you like? Mavs Warriors game one goes tonight. Who do you like there?
I don't know. it's hard for me to root against Luka Doncic, right?
Yeah.
Or not root, but pick against.
The level he's at right now, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's what I got to lean. And again, I haven't been following... I followed the first round very closely because it took place before the Stanley Cup playoffs. But since then, I've been dialed into a full night of hockey since. So I'm here and there. I'm watching highlights and reading, but I'm not watching the games. So it's hard for me to really evaluate. But I just hope that's a close series. I think it's cool. The other side of it, I think the Golden State Warriors getting back to this stage is pretty cool, considering the injuries and Kevin Durant departing and just being, what did they have, second overall pick not too long ago. Like being from there, or being from like the dynasty to there and back to the spot where they might be reaching the NBA Finals once again, is I think that's pretty cool. And I know there's probably some people of sick of them already, but I think that's cool that they – I've gotten back here.
Oh, there it is.
I was holding that in the whole time I was speaking.
All right, it's a good time to take a break then. You clean yourself up, okay? We'll be back in a moment. Still to come, Gord Wilson's going to join us at the top of the hour as our Sens and NHL insider as In the Box continues on TSN 1200. All right, 12:51. Gord will join us in about 15 minutes from now. Gord Wilson, that is, color analyst here on TSN 1200 of Sens Hockey. Get his thoughts on the opening of round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs that began last night, and the other two series begin tonight. The Worlds, Tim Stützle, it appears, waiting for official word on that, it appears, though, that he's likely done at the Worlds with a knee strain, according to Gord Miller's report from earlier this morning. So we'll get into that coming up in our next segment. Some other pieces of hockey news that we can chew upon here. Kevin Fiala's name has come up again. And this is Mike Russo, covers the Wild for the Athletic. Kind of did his post-mortem end of the season things to do, to-do list for the Wild. And we all know with the Suter and Parisi buyouts here, the next three off seasons are going to be really difficult. A lot of dead money sitting there, so the tough decisions will have to be made. They'll have to get creative of how they maintain what's been a very competitive team. Disappointing first-round exit to the St. Louis Blues here. Fiala had an 85-point season this past year. He had a bit of a slow start to the year, really turned it on late to get to that point. His cap hit is $5.1 million. Signed the one-year deal to avoid arbitration last summer. And he needs a contract. He has been rumored for much of the season off and on. And this goes back, and I think Gord was one of the very first people to bring his name up. We had Gord on the show, as we always do. I think Gord mentioned this in October as Fiala as a player to watch. And Russo, in his story, quote, the Senators have long had an interest in Fiala. Also says a natural partner could be the Devils, for that matter. As Tom Fitzgerald has indicated, he would consider trading his first-round pick in such a package. So, does Kevin Fiala, Graham Creech, do it for you if that is a target for the Ottawa Senators? Would you be happy with that acquisition? Would that be the right type of player to bring in up front to play with Tim Stützle?
I think I'd be happy with it. I think there are other fits. I just don't know of availability, right? Like, I think ideally, maybe you want more of a shooter that also plays with an edge, kind of to be on his line. But like definitely a skilled player, but more of a shooter. I think Fiala probably more of a possession guy. So like, I'm not honestly like if it happens, I think I'd be pretty excited about it, even though his playoff was lackluster, and I think that those would be the areas of concern in terms of what does he bring at that time of year and can he do that? But I would still be excited. But I think ultimately there could be a better fit, but that's just like wishful thinking of like the ideal fit, because who knows what's going to be available.
Well, it goes without saying, because he needs a contract, right? if you made a deal for Kevin Fiala, then you know what you're signing him to, and you're comfortable with that. Because he's an RFA. His age, he's at the right age. That would come in mid-career, coming off an 85-point season, could slide right in with a peer group here that's around the same age as him. All that kind of makes it fit. But I guess the real question is, if the Ottawa Senators have that seventh overall pick in play, would that pick be in play for this player in particular? Or do you think that would be, you'd be looking for something else if you're going to part with a seventh overall pick than Kevin Fiala? Would that be fair? Would you be fine with parting with that asset, that pick, to bring in this player?
And plus, or just straight up?
Just part of it. Like that. That's the starting point, right? For the, all right, we're getting that pick and whatever else it is, right? But that would be the primary piece. And anything else would obviously be a little bit of window dressing, but that would be the primary asset that you would part with.
Yeah,
to bring in.
I'm expecting that pick to be moved. I think, like, in an absolute ideal scenario, I think I'd like to see them make the pick and use next year's first as a piece to acquire something that they're looking for, whether it's someone to play with Stützle or whatever it ends up being. But I have a feeling that it's number seven it's going to be moved.
All right. Thoughts on that? Send them in. But just Fiala's name has come up again in relation to the Senators through Mike Russo and his kind of postmortem on the Minnesota Wild. And, boy, they've got a lot of questions, right, with what they're going to do with their roster. Do they bring Marc-Andre Fleury back? If they do, then what's that mean for Talbot? You know, can they afford to keep Fiala? If they do, and they sign him to money, somebody else has to leave, maybe a couple of bodies because of that big-time dead money cap crunch that's on the horizon. And if that happens, hey, listen, they had a young player like Boldy step up mid-season, become an impact player for them. They got to be counting on former 67 Mark Rossi to be that guy next year. Come in, still not making big money yet, still on his entry level, had a good season in the American League. If he can step into their lineup and contribute right away, that'll go a long way to try to get through those dead cap years, which are huge with those buyouts. Okay, we'll take that top hour break. We'll welcome Gord Wilson to the conversation. Standing by, he's coming up next on In the Box on TSN 1200.